And a very good evening to you once again. I am Greg Sincerely. Time now for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck this evening, we've got Dr. Carol Ford St. Hill. She will be your presenter this evening. Of course, she will have her guest and she will introduce that person. And of course, we all will learn something as we usually do on Sunday evening. So a very special good evening to Dr. Carol Ford St. Hill. Good evening.
Good evening, Gregson, and good evening to our listeners. Thank you for having me as usual. Thank you for hosting us. So I just welcome everybody to the Better Health Radio Show, which we know is aimed at raising public awareness of common mental health issues that affect all of us. And as Gregson said, I am Dr. Carol Ford St. Hill, and I'll be hosting this evening. We are looking forward to an engaging and interactive session, because remember, this is all about you, the listener. So you can call in at 434-1790, or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862 as we discuss a topic that may be a bit heavy for some, but definitely one that we need to speak about more. And this evening, I have Dr. Greg Hadmore with me to discuss. We're going to be looking at pancreatic cancer. And if we have the time, we will also like to discuss colon cancer. So thank you for coming on with us, Dr. Padmore. How are you this evening?
Thanks, Dr. Forrest and Hill. I'm good. Thanks. How are you all doing?
You're good. So let me tell the listeners a little bit more about Dr. Padmore. Dr. Padmore attended the Christchurch Foundation School and subsequently the Barbados Community College, where he and I met. So half of this sounds like my bio too. Post BCC, he attended UMona for preclinical years. For the preclinical years of medical school from 2006 to 2009, and completed his clinical years in Barbados at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital from 2009 to 2011. He completed internship at the QEH in 2012, becoming the intern of the year at completion of internship. Following this, he entered the Department of Surgery at QEH and completed his Doctor of Medicine in General Surgery in December 2018. He subsequently pursued two subspecializations, first in hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgery, so that would be the liver and the gallbladder, then surgical oncology at the University of Calgary in Canada between 2020 and 2022. He has since returned and is working as a consultant general and hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgeon and surgical oncologist at the QEH, and cancer awareness is one of his passions. So you can join me with welcoming again a very, very, very qualified physician in Dr. Padmore. So Dr. Padmore, is pancreatic cancer a problem in Barbados?
Thanks a lot, Kyo. Thanks for the introduction and the invitation. Let's start off with what I like. Always like to start on what cancer is. I think it's important to understand the basics. And in general, cancer, as we
is. I can just pause you right here. I want to listen to know you're in for a treat, because one thing Dr. Padmore is very good at from the time we were students is breaking down. So I know that I am about to have a lesson as well. So go ahead. So what is cancer?
Yeah. So cancer is that broad term used for the uncontrolled regulation, uncontrolled growth of cells. And in essence, you can get a cancer of any organ in the body. And in this case, where we're looking at pancreas, that is where different cells in the pancreas start to grow unchecked. So your body normally would control the turnover of different cells, but then when you have a cancer, that is where it is out of control of the body. So in this case, pancreas is where we're focusing, and hopefully if we do get into colon, that is another site that it can occur. when we look at pancreatic cancer in particular, the next thing we look at is what is the pancreas? So it is that organ is one of these organs that you is quite deep in the abdomen, and its main purpose is for the production of insulin, which is used to break down the sugar in your diet. But it also has some other enzymes that helps with digestion and hormones as well. But when you have the cells that become cancerous in the pancreas, the more common ones are not the insulin cells. They're the other cells that produce other enzymes, and they can go unchecked. In Barbados, the pancreatic cancer, when you look at the National Barbados National Registry statistics, it is the most recent publication of the registry was this year, but the years that they looked at were up to 2018, and it showed in 2018 there was an increase in pancreatic cancer. But I guess we can pause there and then we can continue along that line. So yes, it is of concern. It has been an increase, and it's something that we overall is not as common as the more common cancers like breast, colon. It's about the fifth most common in Barbados, and it's in keeping with the world figures, but it is important to be aware of it.
So yes, because one of the reasons, because you know, some of our listeners may be familiar with, there are a couple more famous, I guess, persons who made their story known, and like the most, I would say one of the most famous ones I can think about would have been Alex Trebek from Jeopardy, right? Mm-hmm. Who really gave the world a view into his journey with pancreatic cancer. But then we know also locally, one of our former prime ministers, that was the cause of his untimely and sharp young death while he was in office. In Prime Minister Thompson. And I think there's a lack of knowledge about pancreatic cancer. So like, what are some of the symptoms that person should be concerned about if they're experiencing? Not that I want everybody to jump and think that they have pancreatic cancer, but what would be some of the more concerning symptoms.
Yeah, I like the last thing you said there, because again, these symptoms are always kind of vague, right? So I don't want persons to go away thinking that if you see one or two of these symptoms, you have pancreatic cancer. But when we look at the obvious things, so patients that notice a new onset of jaundice, that is one of the red flags. So jaundice is where you have yellowing of the eyes. And again, there are several causes of jaundice, but if you look at, firstly, who tends to get pancreatic cancer, generally is the older population. And I say older in inverted commas, so generally the ages, the quote is 60 years, 60 and above. So that's not exclusive to that population, because it can happen in younger age groups. So jaundice is one of the red flags, but it's usually a painless jaundice. So you find that your eyes are looking yellow. You may notice your urine looking darker. You may get itching of the skin. In addition to symptoms of like decreased appetite, weight loss that is unexplained, these are some of the red flags of a possible problem happening in the along we call it the biliary tree. So in general, when the bile is being blocked, so bile is a substance that is made in the liver, and that is produced to help digest fats in the food. But generally the tube or the duct that is called the bile duct that connects the liver to the intestine, that runs through the pancreas. So it's just like a pipe. So if you have a blockage of that duct, which is one of the points that it could get blocked, is by the pancreas. You think that you have to investigate for a possible tumor or cancer of the pancreas, but other tumors can cause blockages of that system. But pancreas is the focus of the conversation today. So again, jaundice, weight loss, decreased appetite, usually you don't have abdominal pain, because you can have jaundice with abdominal pain. And in those scenarios, that you may entertain other causes of the jaundice. But again, the focus in this case would be for the painless type of jaundice.
And then, so painless jaundice, anything else that our listeners should look out for, to maybe not necessarily specific to pancreatic cancer, but then that they, like other presentations that would make them have to go to their doctor.
Correct. So the pancreas is interesting because it has different portions of it, right? So it has what we call the head, which is where most of the insulin cells are, but it also has a tail. So that tail can also get cancers within it, but it's interesting because the blockage of the duct only happens if it was occurring in the head of the pancreas. So you can have symptoms such as weight loss, decreased appetite, without actually becoming jaundice, and that also can be a presentation of pancreatic cancer. But again, cancers on a whole can have weight loss, decreased appetite. So again, these symptoms can overlap other cancer presentation. True. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. Somebody goes to their doctor, the doctor suspects that there is some underlying disease process, because you know, usually if you go to a general practitioner, they may not, you know, you can't scan with your eyes, you know, to say, okay, well, this is definitely your pancreas that's affecting you. But somebody comes in with jaundice and weight loss and decreased appetite, and the doctor says, okay, well, there's a list of things. It might be something with your liver, it might be with your gallbladder, but we have to rule out the pancreas. Is there a blood test for pancreatic cancer?
Yeah, that's a good question. The answer would be, generally, we call them tumor markers, which are blood tests that can highlight where a possible tumor may be coming from. But they are used pretty specific for, they're not used for screening, meaning you shouldn't go to your doctor and you're otherwise well and ask them for a blood test for pancreatic cancer. So that's one of the things, mainly because these blood tests can be elevated in other conditions. So sometimes it shouldn't be used as a screening test, because there's no screening test for pancreatic cancer,
which is very important to stress. There is no screening test for pancreatic cancer. So it's not one of these cancers like breast where we could recommend from a certain age that you get screening tests done, because there really is none.
Exactly. So then the blood investigations, generally, first of all, if someone presented with those symptoms, we generally would want to confirm if we call them a liver test, liver function test, to help characterize what type of jaundice they have. Again, because you have different causes of jaundice. And usually if you're suspicious, imaging, which is like, usually we will start off with like an ultrasound scan, which can give you some features of what we call a surgical cause of a jaundice. And from the ultrasound, generally for more information, a CAT scan is done. And once you are seeing a mass or a growth on the CAT scan in the pancreas, that is when you then do the tumor marker, which helps to add to your diagnostic information for that patient. So again, no blood tests for screening of pancreatic cancer. However, if you do have symptoms and you do have imaging or a CAT scan that is suggestive of a growth in the pancreas, there is a blood test that helps us to determine if that growth in the pancreas is a cancerous growth. But also, not all cancers produce this marker. So again, you can have a normal tumor marker, is what we call it, of the pancreas, but still have a cancer. So it's a pretty dynamic test in terms of the interpretation. But the one of the main things I want to get away from the listeners to get away with here is that there is no screening test for it.
Yes. Right. Yes. And so somebody gets, okay, patient gets a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. Because of a lot of the cases that we probably would have heard about, mm-hmm. more so in the news, on social media in, you know, years gone by, a lot mm-hmm. of people have this idea in their head that, you know, as long as you get pancreatic cancer, that your fate is sealed.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Alex Trebek gave, I like the fact that he brought the world along for his journey. Of course, we know he, being who he was and the amount of money that he made, had access to things that the average person might not. But yeah, we know that that's a contributing factor. But I think that at least his story did give hope that it's not a death sentence. Even though he did pass away, he lived for quite a long time after the diagnosis.
Yeah.
There's another YouTuber recently that I saw going through a similar situation, and when I was going through the comments, there were actually a lot of persons commenting and giving their stories about relatives that they had who had pancreatic cancer, and you know, this is 5 years, 6 years down the road, and they're still with us. So tell us a little bit about, obviously I know prognosis for any disease depends on a number of factors, mm-hmm. but in 2023, somebody, if you're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, does it automatically mean that the prognosis is bad?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in general, maybe look at pancreatic cancer. The treatment options available are, first of all, you have an assessment by a surgeon to determine if the growth is removable with surgery. That assessment is pretty complex because we have to look at the patient in front of us to see, firstly, are they fit enough for an operation?
Right.
That is the first thing, really, to see, because as I mentioned earlier, it commonly comes or is a disease of the older population. So generally 60 years and above. However, age is not the only thing that would stop you from operating it. So you can have a fit 80-year-old who can tolerate a major surgery, but then you can also have a pretty poor performing 60-year-old, for example. So firstly, we look at the patients, what we call their performance status. Uh-huh. Next thing we look at is their imaging, which is the CAT scan. Yeah. To see which part of the pancreas this growth is located, and what are the factors that are preventing you from removing this growth safely. And these factors generally involve looking at the vessels, looking at the location, and in essence, unfortunately, the chances of us performing surgery are about 10 to 20% of patients are eligible for surgery. So that is definitely one of the numbers we look at, because the percentage of patients that are able to get surgery, they are low, but once you're a candidate, definitely it is something that is pushed for sure.
Okay. We have a caller on the line, and then we'll come back.
No problem.
For the treatment option. Hello, good evening.
Yes, hi, good evening. How are you doing?
I am fine. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. That's great. Well, I love you for blessing me with your presence, because I thank you that all my blessings come from you, because who bless no man can curse. I love this topic this evening because it is important to note that I had cancer in my family as well, so I need to look out for these things to say, as the doctor, good evening to you, Doc, and thank Grayson for taking my call as I turned 60 and beyond. Just a couple of questions, three questions.
Three questions. Now, remember, you're going to keep this brief today, right?
Right. So the first question is, in terms of pancreatic cancer, when there is from the local cancer invasive to systematic metastasis, is there a link between, based upon that, is there a link between getting the pancreatic cancer first and then getting colon cancer, or is there any link between pancreatic cancer and colon cancer? And my second question has to deal with the particular set of cancer, and dealing with pancreatic cancer more so, and when you're actually diagnosed and you have advanced cancer, can that cause diabetes as well, or is diabetes a part of this cancer that you can get? So do you get diabetes and any pancreatic cancer, or does pancreatic cancer have that side effect of giving you diabetes as well, because it deals with the pancreas and its thing and its production of insulin or lack thereof? Mm-hmm. And my last question is, in terms of the cancer actual its removal and so on, how long does a surgery usually take to get rid of, say, a tumor or something within the pancreas, or getting it out of your abdomen? Sorry, how long does the surgery usually take, and why would it take so long? Based on the advanced methods I know that we have now from before, in terms of nowadays with the practice of trying to prevent and get rid of, so that you can treat, diagnose, and so on, the pancreatic cancer. Thank you very much. You brought it into my social life there, bro.
Thank you.
Thanks for the questions. So firstly, yes, you can have more than one cancer presenting, but it's not very common at all. So generally, there isn't a real link, per se, between like pancreas and colon. The chances of having both at the same time is quite low. In terms of the second part of the question,
diabetes,
correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't want persons to go away from this thinking that there is that if you're become diagnosed with diabetes, you have pancreatic cancer. But however, in the history, if you find that you have a patient that we see come in their 60s or 70s, mm-hmm. and they're newly diagnosed with diabetes, that is not normal. So there is an association where you can have, if you look back into the history, you may have a patient who had been diagnosed with diabetes a couple months prior. And this is in the older population. Mm-hmm. And then you find that they started to present with the symptoms of like jaundice and weight loss after a couple months after. So that is an association, but again, it's not to say that if you have diabetes, you have pancreatic cancer. It's just putting everything together.
Yeah, not a common association.
Correct. But it's a red flag from when we talk to the patient and they're elderly and it's not in keeping with the age of presentation of these communicable diseases. Mm-hmm. Non-communicable, sorry.
Would have been somebody who was otherwise somebody who was overweight their whole life with a strong family history of diabetes. You know, if they present at 60 something and the doctor realizes, okay, well, yes, you have elevated blood sugars, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is anything other than diabetes, but we're talking about somebody who was otherwise fit before.
Yeah, and in terms of the question about the surgery, length of time of surgeries, it really depends on the location. The ones that present with jaundice usually have a much more major surgery, something we call a Whipple procedure. But in essence, surgery timing, it really is dependent on how advanced the disease is, how long the surgery will take. But anyway, from 4 to 6 hours. But again, that is variable based on patient factors. So we always tell patients the length of time isn't really what we look at. We look at how we can safely get the tumor removed, is what our our main focus usually is. But I will quote average 4 to 6 hours.
Okay.
All right. Doc,
right, so it's specific to the case. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sorry for interrupting you. Before you move on,
though. No!
I've got a WhatsApp here. They've asked me to ask you and the good doctor, Dr. Mm-hmm. Padmore, can one do a fine needle aspiration on the growth to determine pancreatic cancer? That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two.
That's a very specific question.
You wish me to go ahead or you want to respond?
Yeah, you can go ahead. All right. You can go ahead.
Next one. Can a patient with pancreatic cancer show symptoms of diabetes? And the last query, is pancreatic cancer most prevalent in the head?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
This person's been reading.
There you go.
Yeah, good question. So firstly, yes, you can do. So generally, a fine needle aspirate is what the broad term is a biopsy. Of the growth. In general, the ways of getting this biopsy, usually the safest way is to do it via, we call it an endoscopy, which is the camera that goes down your stomach and goes right next to the pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
However, if on imaging it is resectable, meaning you're able to safely remove it from the CAT scans review, we generally don't need to do a biopsy up front because it wouldn't change that surgery would be able to take it out. But most of the time when a biopsy is needed is for those patients that may have spread of the cancer, meaning it has gone to another organ like the liver or the lungs. So surgery is not on the card, but you need to still get a biopsy. So a fine needle aspirate is an option, yes. And as we mentioned a little earlier, yes, diabetes can be associated with a new diagnosis of pancreatic cancer because in essence, as you mentioned, the growth of cancer in the pancreas can overshadow or push on the insulin cells, and that patient can present with diabetes, but again, not all diagnosis of diabetes for sure, you should think of cancer as the first thing. So it's again, it's multifactorial. But yes, there's an association for new diagnosed diabetes in a age group that you don't really expect to happen.
What was the last question again, Gregson?
All right, the last question was, is pancreatic cancer most prevalent in the head?
Yeah. It is prevalent more, the ones in the head tend to present earlier because you get jaundice quite early. The ones in the body or the tail of the pancreas, which is the end of the gland, because those symptoms don't usually present earlier. Those patients tend not to get jaundice. They present later. But there isn't really to say that the head is more common than the body, but it usually presents earlier, meaning that the patient will go to the doctor earlier because, of course, if you see your eyes looking yellow, that would push you to go rather than the vague weight loss, decreased appetite, which usually you may get with the ones that are not in the head.
Okay. There's no screening test. Is there anything you can do to prevent pancreatic cancer?
Not to prevent it directly, because again, most of patients that present tend to, we call it, present sporadically, meaning no family history. They tend to be unfortunate to have it. But we always recommend a healthy lifestyle because yes, smoking, alcohol use, all of these things, of course, are not helpful for cancer in general. But there isn't anything to really say you can prevent it from happening. Unless you have like a strong family history, but family history on a whole is not. 95% of patients with pancreatic cancer do not have a family history.
That's very important to note as well, because you know a lot of cancers are hereditary, or at least you know we preach to patients about you know being suspicious when you have a family history of certain diseases, but in this case pancreatic cancer is not usually as a result of genetics.
Correct.
Well, in terms of a family history, of specifically pancreatic cancer, but that's a whole nother discussion about the family history of the risk factors for cancer, period, which is usually a lot of poor lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
In some cases. We have another caller on the line. Hello, good evening.
Hello, peace be on to each and everyone. A blessed evening to y'all. I'm glad that you all are speaking about pancreatic cancer because I am a very dear loved one who has pancreatic cancer. And what the good gentleman said about diabetes, yes, it brought it on. And at times you have to get the insulin. And sometimes when you have to go to chemo, the blood count is very low, so you can't take the chemo or not. 2 weeks or so. And the person had to go to Trinidad to get a spleen. He was in pain for a while, but since he went and he got the spleen put in between the pancreas, and it drained, and it's draining the information that he don't have the taking chemo. And what you said about spreading, it spread to his lungs. Hello?
Hi, no, we're listening.
Pardon me?
But thank you so much for letting us know about your real life experience.
Yeah.
And sorry to hear about your loved one being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, but we definitely wish them all the best.
Thank you very much. And you're just saying, when we ask, he always say he's not in any pain. It's only when he was taking a rigorous three days chemo that uses to really knock him down. At time he couldn't eat for weeks because of his throat, he couldn't swallow. And then after the other day, now he's taking one in the hospital and he's taking the rest for it by tablet, and it turned him dark, the fingers dark, and his feet dark, and he had a rash around his neck, and he started to have sore mouth. But they did, the pharmacist gave him something, honey and something, I can't remember the other name, so that helped heal it. So he's there. And then I would like him to be there just a little more, not once, he's not in any pain, but it really hurts. It hurts. And he's a very good person, a godly person.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all very much, and I'm glad that you brought it up. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being brave enough to share that story. And again, from all of us here at the station, myself and Dr. Padmore, we wish your loved one all the best as he goes through this journey. Right. Is that typical of a lot of disease stories? Sound similar to a lot of the cases that you do see, Dr. Padmore?
Yeah, so if you look at how many patients that present with firstly cancer that has not, pancreatic cancer that has not spread, the counter argument is that is about 80% of patients that present and you're not able to remove the cancer.
Right, because you said you can operate on 20%,
about 10 to 20%. Yeah, 10 to 20% of patients can be operated on. And again, we only operate if we don't see any evidence of spread.
Okay.
If for some reason we see cancer deposits like in the liver or in the lungs, doing this major operation to remove the pancreatic portion, because we don't take out all the pancreas, we want to remove that portion that has the cancer within it. If you cannot clear all of the cancer, pancreas is one of these organs that if it has spread somewhere, we don't operate. It's a little different for colon, but each cancer is different. So unfortunately, because of how it presents, the aggressive nature of it, we can have up to 80% of patients who present and we're not able to remove it.
Okay. So I'm going to segue, unless you have any other things on pancreas that you wanted to leave with our listeners, we will segue into colon, as you mentioned just now, because I know that definitely falls under you as well. And it's one of the more common cancers that we see. worldwide, but also particularly in Barbados.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the screening recommendations for colon cancer, because that is one of the cancers that you can screen for.
Yeah. So colon, as most people would know, colon is a large intestine. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about colon, we also talk about the rectum as well. All of that goes together. And in essence, cancers of the colon or the rectum, they generally start as a polyp. So a polyp is a small growth from the wall. So if you can imagine, you have a pipe, the mm-hmm. inside lining of that pipe is where cancers can arise from, and they start as a little polyp. And it takes about 10 years for these polyps to grow into a cancer of the colon. Given that, again, this is in patients that do not have like a strong family history, because those patients that have a familial history of colon cancer, and when we say family history, we generally mean first degree relatives, so like your parents, your siblings, not generally the cousins and the aunts, but somebody in the immediate circle. Those patients' polyps tend to grow quicker. But if, again, the vast majority of patients present without a family history, and it takes about 10 years for a polyp to transform. Given that, we look to see how can we pick up these polyps, because if you can remove these polyps, if they are there, you potentially stop the transformation into a cancer. The age of recommended screening for that is generally from 45 years old. And the options for screening, just to stick a pin there, in the African American population, the age can even be dropped to 40 years old in some of the guidelines. The options for screening, you will notice that you might have seen some stool testing.
Yeah.
What these stool testing do is they look for blood in the stool, but again, they're not. You have different stool tests available. The gold standard test, however, is the colonoscopy, because that is the test that can look to find if there's any polyps there, and if there's a polyp there, they can also be removed as well. Another way to see it is that if you did a stool test and your stool test is positive, you should follow up with a colonoscopy. So age of screening, generally 45 years old, and if at that test, colonoscopy, for example, if it is normal, you don't see any polyps or any growths, the next time is 10 years from that time. Okay. So you see, it's not a yearly thing. If a polyp is found and removed, that polyp, that time to repeat scope or repeat colonoscopy is in about 3 years' time. So it is dropped to a shorter interval.
Sorry about that. So, screening at 45. If you have a strong family history or a family history of colon cancer, does that change the age that you should start screening at?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, if you have a family member, a first degree family member who was diagnosed with colon cancer, you should screen 10 years before that family member's age of diagnosis. For example, if you had a family member who was diagnosed with colon cancer at the age of 50, you should start your screening at age 40. And again, this is first degree family, so parents, siblings, for example. So that's where when you see your family doctor, the details of any family history is usually asked about in terms of colon cancer, right? So quite commonly, we need to be aware of it. So colon in Barbados is, according to the Barbados National Registry, it is the third highest cancer. So it is more common than pancreas. Pancreas is about the fifth. And colon, there is screening available. So that is why the push is pretty, well, we're trying to educate the public about it. Because if you look at when patients present in Barbados, according to the registry, when we look at the staging of colon cancer, so staging is tells you like if it has spread somewhere. So stage four is if it has gone to other organs. And stage one is when it is hasn't gone anywhere. It's still confined to the colon. But in between there, there's a stage two and a three. And the stage three is when it has gone to like what we call, you know, Watson kernels in the groin and stuff. You do have those in the abdomen as well. So you find that if it has gone to the lymph nodes, which are right next to that bowel, is a stage three. And unfortunately, from that statistics in the Barbados National Registry, up to about 33% of patients present with stage three. As you can imagine, the ideal would be to catch patients in stage one, because that is when we can cure the problem. Not that we can't treat stage two and three or four, but again, the chances of cure is much higher if you catch it early. And to catch it early, you have to do the screening and remove those polyps if they are present. Okay, again, 45 years old is when we should start screening for colon cancer, unless you have a family member that was diagnosed before the age of 45, for example.
Okay. So if you get your general practitioner sends you for the screening test, or rather does the screening test on you with the stool test.
Yes.
And it comes back positive for blood in the stool, then what would be the next step usually for that patient?
Yeah, that's a good question. Usually after having a positive stool test, you should be referred to get a colonoscopy by one of the specialists on the island. There are many specialists, family doctors will know who to refer you to. In essence, a positive stool test for blood tells you that you may have an issue. You don't know where it is, or because you do have a percentage of patients that may not have a problem, because some of the tests have different pickup rates. But you don't want to be risking a may. Well, you want to confirm if something is there. If it is there, you can. If it is like a little polyp, we can treat it. So generally, a positive test for the stool should be followed up with a colonoscopy in a short order, not a year's down the road. It should be
not a long waiting time. Yeah. So then it would be on colonoscopy that these polyps can be removed, or do you have to have another surgical procedure?
Yeah. So first, the colonoscopy is that. So in essence, a colonoscopy is where we use a camera, a flexible scope. Patients generally have some sedation, so it's a pretty comfortable procedure, a day procedure. Just come in, you get it done, and you go home. And with that camera, we look in the lining of the colon, and you look to see if there's any polyps, if there's any growths there, if there's any tumors, because you can also have a tumor there, which you may not be able to remove with colonoscopy, but you will be able to do some biopsies of it, taking a small piece, and based on that, further workup continues. But hoping that that isn't the case, if it is a polyp, yes, it could be removed, and that treats that problem, that polyp.
Okay, that's really good. That's really good to know. What are some of the risk factors, other than family history, for colon cancer?
Yeah, so similarly, age, the older you get, the higher the chance of you developing polyps. You do have lifestyle, or we call modifiable risk factors. So that includes like diet, exercise, smoking, alcohol use, diet high in red meats, for example. Right. Those are things you can change. Those are the modifiable factors. And then you have the non-modifiable ones, which again, age is something which you can't change.
You can't change anything about that.
You can't change the ethnicity. So African Americans, Afro-Caribbean persons also have a higher risk of colon cancer. So those are the, and of course, genetics as well, which is the family history. Those are the non-modifiable factors, right? So it isn't one thing that puts you at risk. It tends to be a culmination of other of everything yeah. together.
Yeah,
so multiple factors. Yeah, and try to change the stuff you can control. Just diet, okay. exercise. Yeah.
Okay. And as far as, so yes, we would love everybody to get screened from 45 or earlier, depending mm-hmm. on their risk, right? But we know that's not always going to be the case for everybody. So what are some of the common symptoms that persons yeah. with colon cancer present with?
That's a good question. So generally for colon cancer, any blood in the stool should be a mm-hmm. red flag, right? It could be just hemorrhoids, but again, we don't want persons to go away thinking that is you see some blood, it's hemorrhoids, and I don't need to worry yeah. about it. So any blood in the stool, generally blood mixed in with the stool, usually tends to be more of like a darker red blood. But again, mm-hmm. blood in the stool changes in bowel habits. Again, what happens is it is like a pipe. So if you could imagine that your pipe gets blocked, it slowly yes. happens. And you find that the stools may change the in terms of the caliber of the stools. So they may start mm-hmm. looking like pencil-like. That is mm-hmm. a red flag. But again, a lot of these symptoms, I don't want persons to be waiting for these symptoms, because that tells you that you may have a actual tumor there. But mm-hmm. things that those are definitely red flags. Blood in the stool, change in bowel habits, similar weight loss. Mm-hmm. Anemia is another thing. So you may find that you're easily fatigued, and you go to your family doctor and they do some blood tests for you and they find out that you have an anemia.
Yeah.
Anemia can occur in tumors that occur on the right side of the colon, because they tend to bleed slowly and can drop your blood count over a period of time. So unexplained anemia should also be followed up with a colonoscopy as well. Again, similarly, pain is not a main issue, but again, if you mm-hmm. do have a if you do have a bowel blockage where you start to have abdominal, your tummy's getting bigger, you're not passing any stool, any ear, vomiting, that is kind of at the end where you fully have a blockage there. That is really an emergency presentation, and you should go to the to an emergency facility, accident and emergency, to be seen. But we're hoping to change how many patients present like that, because if you have the screening again earlier, you're hoping that we don't be catching things when there is an established cancer.
Yes, we prefer prevention
yeah.
rather than having to come in after the fact when it comes to all cancers. Are there any myths about particularly cancer treatment when it comes to surgery? Mm-hmm. Or any lessons that you want to impart on our listeners where that is concerned? Because wait, actually let me just reverse a little bit. I want you to explain to our listeners what surgical oncology is, because they might not understand your role in cancer treatment mm-hmm. at all, because this might be one of the first times that they're hearing of a surgical oncologist.
Yeah, so in cancer treatment on a whole, cancer treatment is firstly a team approach. It has multiple mm-hmm. modalities. So you many people would know about medical oncologists, which are the yeah. doctors that administer and deal with the chemotherapy side of treatment, different drugs. Mm-hmm. And as a surgical oncologist, we are the persons that help coordinate the actual surgical decision making, because it can be complex. And in this case, if you look at colon, for example, if you do present with a colon cancer, it isn't that we can't do anything about it. It is just that the decision making tends to be more complex, especially if it has gone to an other organ such as the liver. And similarly, if it has gone to the liver and it hasn't gone anywhere else, is in a favorable position, you still have surgical options in terms of liver resections that are possible for patients with colon cancer. So in essence, everyone that has cancer that may have gone to the liver is not eligible for resection, but if it is coming from the colon or the rectum, that is one of the indications that is a possibility. But again, that decision making is a team approach, looking at patient's fitness, where the tumors are located, and how to tie that in terms of chemotherapy treatments. So it's pretty much a surgeon that specializes in cancer.
Okay. And it's really, really good to know that we have someone like you on island who has that subspecialization, because, you know, many, many years ago, maybe before our time in medicine, a diagnosis of cancer, period, didn't matter where it was, anybody was a death sentence, as far as everybody that hears, okay, I got a diagnosis of cancer, and well, that's the end of my life. But what I wanted to highlight, particularly the two that we discussed today, was because there are so many more treatment options than there were 30, 40, even 20, even 10 years ago, because medicine is quickly advancing. And so I want our listeners to understand that you have options and you shouldn't just ignore symptoms because you're afraid and you think, well, what's, and if your general practitioner says, well, this is what we're suspicious of, that you just decide, well, I'm not going to these appointments, I'm not doing anything else, I'm just going to call the funeral home, because there are so many options now and you can live a long life, but it depends on, is everything is on a case by case basis, because it's not to have had more stress, it is very, you know, it's multifactorial, and there's a team that's involved in every patient's care. So don't get annoyed when you get sent to this person or the next person or the next person. There's a reason that you're getting all those referrals. So, because we're running out of time soon, what would be the take-home points that you want to leave with our listeners today?
So take-home points, firstly, if you look at pancreatic cancer, it is about the fifth most common in Barbados. One of the more aggressive cancers. However, an assessment is always made to look and see whether yours can be removed or not. But even if it isn't removable, there is treatment options available to help. Right, that's the biggest thing to note, that it's not a straight off like death sentence, so to speak. In any cancer, there are many options available, so that's the first thing. For in terms of colon cancer, screening is the biggest thing. We need to start pushing more screening, age of 45 years old, unless you have a first degree relative that has been diagnosed before that age. You should get screened 10 years before that relative was diagnosed. And even if you do have a colon cancer, there are many options available for treatment. Our focus generally is that prevention, so we want to push more screening. But again, it's not that we're ignoring persons that may have come in with a cancer. It definitely is a multifactorial or multimodal approach in terms of specialists that help get you through that diagnosis.
Don't ignore
any symptoms, any blood in the stool, change in bowel habits, weight loss, anemia or fatigue. You should see your family doctor and have, you try not to ignore those symptoms. And of course, jaundice is probably one of the biggest things for pancreas. Yes. Not the only one, but any jaundice for sure, you should see your doctor.
Yes. And I try to encourage our listeners to advocate for themselves, because sometimes when it comes to cancer, you know, by the time you get to weight loss and all of that, it's usually a little more advanced. But as a person, you need to, as an individual and as caregivers for older persons, you need to pay attention to things like bowel habits and changes in your bowel habits. You know, we as doctors prefer that you come and we do a test, because you're not really sure if something may be a problem, we do a test and we can call you back and say, or bring you back in and say everything is fine, the test was negative, there's nothing there, we will just continue to monitor it, as opposed to when you come later on having ignored a lot of symptoms before and, you know, the news is not so good. So do not feel like anything is too small to ask your doctor about. And I encourage, if you as a patient do not feel like you got the satisfaction at one place, it is okay to seek a second opinion, because you are the only person who knows how you feel. So you know that this is not normal for you, because sometimes, as Dr. Padma was pointing out, especially with like pancreatic cancer, and even sometimes with colon, the symptoms can be very vague when you speak to the patients who've been diagnosed. When they really think back, there were a lot of, you know, vague symptoms, a discomfort in the abdomen, but not necessarily bad pain all the time, feeling tired, but finding every reason for why they were tired other than the fact that something was actually going on inside. So thank you so much, Dr. Padmore. I'm sure our listeners are much more wise today, and I'm hoping that all of them 45 years and up, if your doctor hasn't brought it up, please ask your doctor about screening for colon cancer. You do not have to have a family history. You just have to be over the age of 45, and it is one of the more common cancers in Barbados, so it's definitely one that you need to do your screening for. So thank you very much, Dr. Padmore. Yes. Thank you, Gregston,
for
moderating as usual.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right.
Yes, and we will bring back Dr. Padmore at some point, because we're going to continue, because these are topics that I'm very passionate about, that I want my listeners, I don't only talk about mental health, that I want our listeners to know about, especially I'm big on prevention of diseases and not just talking about the disease process. So thank you.
All right. You're more than welcome. Thank you kindly. That's your presenter this evening, Dr. Kira Ford St. Hill. And as her guest, you had Dr. Greg Padmore, and she promised to bring him back in the future so we can learn some more about these dreaded diseases. So thank you both. Have a wonderful evening, and take care until next weekend.